This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by PRMIseattle.com, Primary Residential Mortgage. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Some news in the political world. All of it is good for Republicans, including the latest to enter the race for Texas governor and the Democrats' never-ending bid to try to turn that state blue. Part of the reason why they want to turn it blue is that it would signal some significant upside for the Democratic Party, who have been really in the South unable to gain a foothold. But in Texas, because of the changing demographics, ironically due to Democrats who leave California and Washington and Oregon to go to a state that hasn't been ravaged by political progressives, but then they end up voting for the same people, they see some chance at flipping red. Flipping Texas from red to blue. Symbolically, that would be very, very important. Huge. So today we heard that Beto O'Rourke, Robert Francis, is running for Texas governor. Still going by the name Beto because he wants people to think that he is Hispanic. He thinks it's going to help with votes. It's not. He made his announcement earlier today via video.
I'm running for governor.
Hi.
And I want to tell you why.
Okay, tell us.
This past February, when the electricity grid failed and millions of our fellow Texans were without power, which meant that the lights wouldn't turn on.
No, I know how
the heat wouldn't run.
No, I know how that works.
Pretty soon their pipes froze and the water stopped flowing.
No, we all know what it means when there is an incident with electricity going out. But please continue.
They were abandoned by those who are elected to serve and look out for them. It's a symptom of a much larger problem that we have in Texas right now.
Those
in positions of public trust have stopped listening to, serving, and paying attention to, and trusting the people of Texas. And so they're not focused on the things that we really want them to do.
So, for example, when they say we need border security and you're someone who says you want open borders, that's you listening to the people of Texas. When Texans say they support law enforcement, but you go out and say you support the defund movement, that's you listening to them? Or is that only listening to the progressives who live in Austin? Is that really what this is about?
Like making sure that we have a functioning electricity grid, or that we're creating the best jobs in America right here in Texas, or that we have world-class schools, or that we make progress on the things that most of us actually agree on, like expanding Medicaid or legalizing marijuana.
Okay, legalizing marijuana, that's where you're going? That's your pitch? That's your pitch. Okay. Yeah. Good luck with that. That's your big deal. You've got a southern border that is wide open. It's causing huge problems for the state of Texas and for this country. But you think the voters are focusing on legalizing weed? Yeah. Okay. Now, at the same time, a new ABC News Washington Post poll is out. And it looks really good for Republicans. According to this poll, Republican congressional candidates currently hold their largest lead in midterm election vote preference in the 40-year history of this poll. Never have they done better. Part of the reason is the border situation that Beto O'Rourke ignores, the economic situation that the Biden administration and other Democrats downplay, a crisis overseas with the Afghanistan withdrawal that they told us was an epic success. Right now, some 62% of voters are unhappy with Biden, according to this poll. That is an insane shift in numbers. When you look at the early midterm vote preferences, you have Republicans at 51%, and Democrats at 41%. That is remarkable. That's good news for a state even like Washington, where you've got Kim Schreier, the doctor, if you didn't know, in a district that she should not be representing, going up against a Republican challenger. Who that will be, we don't know yet. Obviously, we're going to see how the primary plays out. But either of them going up against Jesse Jensen is one of the candidates going up against Kim Schreier. Either of them are stronger and deserve to be in Congress. About as many people see the Republican Party as out of touch. And so that's Democrats are. And so that's the one bit of this polling that Republicans have to be a little bit careful about. Don't go crazy like Beto O'Rourke and pretend that things like legal marijuana is what folks are paying attention to. So they do have to figure that part out. But overall, this is just tremendous polling for the Republican Party. This is promising. This is exciting level of numbers. And this, by the way, isn't the only poll that shows this. Poll after poll after poll shows you how deeply unpopular Joe Biden and Democrats are. That's good for all of us. Now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
Let's quickly go over some semi-interesting sports news from the weekend. We'll start with the fact that the Seahawks appear to be done for the season. They lost in a rather spectacular fashion to the Green Bay Packers. Russell Wilson was back. He didn't quite look like he did pre-surgery, which, of course, makes sense. You leave the game even for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It's not very easy to just get immediately back into the swing of things. You're not starting from scratch, but I imagine he is just mentally needs to get back into the game in the same way. But beyond that, you got to be probably assume he's getting a little concerned or careful, extra careful with his finger just so that they don't re-aggravate. Now, he ended up playing Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers did really, really well. For him, he was also out. Different reason, no surgery. He was out because of a COVID issue. He had COVID. He was chastised by pretty much all the national media outlets except for Fox. Fox took a reasonable position, the position I take, which is who cares what your status is as vaccinated? I don't care if you lied about it, unless you lied to someone who, you know, has a underlying health condition. I suppose you don't know in many cases, but you can safely assume that if someone is playing football alongside you, they're probably otherwise reasonably healthy. But still, he misled. He didn't lie. He clearly misled people on his vaccination status, and he ended up getting caught. The question would be, then, how quickly will the fans react? And, you know, will they immediately reintroduce him and support him, or do they feel slighted? Now, of course, they were not slighted at all. The only people who were slighted were the folks on CNN and MSNBC and over at the New York Times. Fans were not slighted in the least. They didn't care about his vaccination status, nor do they care about the vaccination status of any of the players. They care about whether or not you're going to put on a good game, whether or not you're going to bring a win back to the scoreboard. That's all they care about. And that's what they did. They delivered a pretty decisive shutout victory over the Seahawks. And afterwards, Aaron Rodgers got a little bit emotional talking about it, but he said he was very thankful to the people who supported him, despite all the controversy.
A lot of emotions, for sure. Good to be back with the guys. Good to be back at home. Good to be on the field, really. Most emotions from the whole night was probably walking off the field after the game. Definitely got me a little misty. I'm just focusing on the support that I got, and it was deep and wide and greatly, greatly appreciated. There's always going to be criticism in this world.
Yep.
I don't define myself by the criticism.
And that's a good position to take, that you're not going to define yourself by the criticism unless the criticism is legitimate and you don't change your ways. Now, in that regard, that doesn't really matter. He doesn't need to do anything at this point to you know, prove himself. But, you know, there's obviously cases where people are judging you rightly, and you have to be able to, you know, reflect on the judgment and move from there. I think that that is very clearly the smart move to take. Now, we look at this and say, well, now what? Nothing. Now you just mind your own business again. Mind your own business about his COVID vaccine status. He had COVID. He's got natural immunity. If he didn't want to get the vaccine before, he probably doesn't want to get it now. Just don't ask him, because it's none of your business. And then finally, in sports news, local, UW fired their head coach, Jimmy Lake, yesterday. He hadn't even been on the job for 2 years, but he was chosen. People were super excited to see him take over for Chris Peterson. And then all of a sudden, he failed very quickly. Very quickly. Because going into the season, the AP called the team a top 25 team. However, they suffered some pretty embarrassing losses. The fan base was turning on him. And then you had the incident where people pretended he like physically assaulted a player when that's not actually what happened. But they used that to effectively terminate him. Now, they are still going to pay him throughout the end of his contract, which means they're going to be spending out about $9 million. Now, they could have just continued through the end of the season, paid him out the $9 million, but they think it's so serious that they need to reject him as a coach, bring someone else in new, and still give up the $9 billion. Now, you know, there was a comment that was made by their athletic director, Jen Cohen, who said, "No one wanted Jimmy to succeed more than I when I hired him in 2019. Well, I mean, I'm sure he wanted to succeed more than you wanted him to. But ultimately, this change is necessary for a variety of reasons, both on the field and off the field, in reference, presumably, to the incident where he was accused of assaulting someone, even though he didn't. So we'll see where this ends up going. Ultimately, don't care. Go Cougs. I'm kidding. I'm all about the Occidental Tigers. 1-800-465-8770. Find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Woke madness.
Let's quickly go. There's a rather interesting, and really, it's just a fascinating story, actually, out of California, a small city that no one has ever heard of outside of maybe the cities that surround this small city. But it really shines a spotlight on how Republicans can play this game that Democrats play all the time. When Democrats don't want to follow the rule of law, they simply ignore it and declare itself their cities, or really their states, a sanctuary city or a sanctuary state or a sanctuary county, depending on where it is. And obviously here in Washington, we're very familiar as it relates to the topic of immigration. We are in a sanctuary city of Seattle and a sanctuary county of King, and really ultimately a sanctuary state in Washington. Governor Inslee, King County Executive Dow Constantine, Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin, and the future mayor, Mayor-elect Bruce Harrell in Seattle, along with so many other cities in the state, they don't want to enforce immigration law. Now, normally it wouldn't be up to them, and that's right. It's not supposed to be up to them. However, they actively get in the way of the federal government imposing these laws on people in this country illegally, some of whom have criminal backgrounds that Democrats don't care about. They just don't care about them. So when I see a California city saying, okay, we are now voting to declare ourselves a constitutional republic city, also it can protect citizens from COVID mandates, I look at this and say, good for them. If the Democrats are going to do this, when it comes to the topics that they care about, okay, well then so should we. At least on our end, we have freedom on our side. We're doing this to protect rights, not take them away. The name of the city is Oroville. See, I told you, you had no clue where it is. You never heard of it. Their vice mayor, Scott Thompson, spoke with Fox News Digital and said, what we're doing is protecting our citizens' rights as much as we can on the local level. He said, in a way, we're acting as a sanctuary city for our citizens and their rights and freedoms protected by the U.S. and state constitutions. Gavin Newsom, of course, the governor, Gavin Newsom modeled this type of declaration for us when he declared San Francisco a sanctuary state for what he believed to be overreach by the federal government against the citizens. Now, again, ultimately, I think it should be up to a court to decide, not an individual city, even though I approve of this move. I support this move. I understand it. But he's 100% right. When Gavin Newsom or when Jenny Durkin or when Dow Constantine or whomever, when they decide that the federal government is getting too far into overreach, they just declare a sanctuary status. They don't go to a court to ultimately decide. They just unilaterally decide on their own. They might eventually go to court, but they don't wait for a court to decide. They do it on their own before ruling. And we, of course, are supposed to look at that and say, well, they're heroic. They're standing up for people's rights. even if in some cases it's the right of an illegal immigrant who's a rapist to stay in this country and not be deported. And yet I guarantee you that Oroville will earn the ire of Gavin Newsom. He won't care. Democrats don't like it when you use their own tricks against them. So they just abuse their power. Now, this vice mayor requested the measure, according to FoxNews.com, and it passed 6-1 by the Seattle, or by the Seattle, by the, or, yeah, I wish, by the Oroville City Council. The resolution is intended to allow the city to opt out of enforcing, quote, any executive orders issued by the state of California or by the United States federal government that are overreaching or clearly violate our constitutionally protected rights. Now, they didn't look at one particular mandate. Obviously, we have a bunch of different mandates in place in this country. In California, they've got the vaccine passport in some places. They still require you to wear your mask indoors. You've got President Biden's mandate on businesses. So what they're saying was, actually, what we're trying to do here is focus on the issue in general. The, quote, large amount of mandates that are affecting every aspect of our lives and our kids' lives. And in this resolution, they note that the city actually supports and believes in, shocker, quote, the separation of powers, individual rights, and the rule of law outlined in the United States Constitution, including the freedom for local government to have local control over issues related to citizens who reside within the city's jurisdictional boundaries. In other words, we know more than you do, Gavin Newsom, who's never visited Oroville. We know more than you do, Joe Biden, who didn't know Oroville even existed. Then on the local level, we have a better understanding of the data, of the people, of the behaviors. Heck, we have better understanding of the vaccination rates and the spread of COVID than you could ever have. So we're going to decide to do this. Now, obviously, when you've got a vote that's so lopsided, the council members there are big supporters. Dave Pittman is one of them. He spoke to the East Bay Times, said it's about local government taking care of its citizens, period. And that, well, it's what we're doing. Now, he told the vice mayor, told Fox News that each mandate will be handled differently and that the city council will handle any potential legal fights based on the majority vote. He said, each and every mandate will be handled differently. Although we realize the virus is serious, we also believe that protecting the constitutional freedoms of our citizens is also something we take seriously. Our state representatives have been trying to get through our governor for him to hear that just because something works well for big cities like Sacramento or San Francisco does not mean the same thing holds true for rural areas like Oroville. That, again, is a really good point. And we have the same problems here in Washington State, don't we? That because a policy might work in Seattle because there's not going to be a lot of pushback to a vaccine mandate, well, bam, that could work in Buckley. That could work in Roy. That maybe something works in Tacoma, the assumption is, well, of course, then that means it'll work in Everett and Bellingham. But as you know, sometimes it doesn't. And when you look at what's going on the east side of the state, southwest Washington, southeast Washington, when you look at all these smaller communities, they are getting impacted in significant ways, truly significant ways. Also that we can make happy some Seattle activists. And I'm sick and tired of doing things for Seattle. And based on the conversations that I've heard you guys have, some of the text messages or emails that come in, so are you, that you believe that this is not a state that should be dictated by the few, instead dictated by the many. And it's not to say that you don't care about Seattle the same way I'm assuming the folks in Oroville won't say they don't care about people living in San Francisco or L.A., but it's that there are different needs. And too often, because this is all being done politically, it's being driven by politicians. And this is obviously the case, whether it's a Republican or Democrat. But these are politicians who have to, if they want to stay in power, please the big demographical areas, the big population areas. They have to make sure that Seattle is pleased and Tacoma is pleased and maybe Spokane is pleased. But that really depends on how many people in Seattle they can please. And when you have near guarantee that you're going to win some 80% of Seattle voters, because that makes up such a large chunk of the voting population, those are the people you focus on. And so then you completely forget that there's a city called Woodinville. You completely forget about Kelso or Longview or Battleground. When someone tells you, what about Vancouver? You say, well, that's in Canada. It's like, oh, no, my bad. That's really what this is about. This is about folks who live in Puyallup, in University District or University Place, or people who live in Monroe saying, Yeah, it's also about us. And your rules are impacting us in ways you don't think about because all you're thinking about is Seattle or Tacoma. Every once in a while you think about Everett. And so I'm glad that these folks are pushing back, even though I don't necessarily like the idea. I don't like sanctuary status when Democrats do it. I don't really like it when Republicans do it, although obviously I agree with the one side that does it. I just don't like it as a tactic. But unfortunately, Republicans have to start doing this because Democrats have created this system. And so, okay, fine, we'll compete within it and we'll win it based on that until we can change the system. And you know what? Midterm elections coming up, we will be able to change that system. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text, 1-800-465-8770.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories that are coming out of the city of Seattle. And instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start at the South Hill Mall in Puyallup, where there was a rather bizarre and somewhat brazen burglary attempt. Mallgoers thought that they had heard gunshots when they were shopping at the Macy's, particularly in the shoe department. And, you know, this is South Hill Mall. You can have a tendency to be a little bit concerned with your safety in this general area. Fair or not, that is kind of the general brand perception of South Hill. And so people heard these explosions and they were just, you know, shopping for their next pair of shoes. They got very, very concerned. It was very, very loud. But thankfully, it was not gunshots. The assistant manager of customer service from the mall, his name is Wade Evans, spoke with our sister station, Cairo Radio.
When I was here on shift, all I was hearing was like, oh, you know, there's a fire out. We all thought it was outside because the way they were saying it over the radio was that they had everyone evacuated outside the store and that that's where the fire was. And then I find out that it's actually inside. Fireworks. Yeah, right in the shoe department. No idea why.
Huh. So it went from gunshots to concern over fire to then it was fireworks because there was a lot of smoke. Obviously, people were freaked out. Why would you put fireworks inside? Was it a weird prank done by punk kids? Might have been done by punk kids, but not for a prank. When police got there, they saw some folks running away from the smoke-filled store. And then they ended up doing their investigation and confirmed that one person was setting off the fireworks to create a diversion so people could steal. They set off a diversion so others could run in and take shoes and I guess whatever else they could on the way out. Now, firework evidence was recovered from the scene. They don't yet have a suspect in custody. But this is actually kind of an interesting one. We'll see how it ends up developing. We've been seeing more and more of these stories of the brazen burglar attempts and actual burglaries where people will just go into a store. Sometimes you don't even need to have a diversion. You just go in and you steal a bunch of stuff. You know, you do it with a little bit of a sense of urgency. You're not just moseying down aisle by aisle and picking up what you want. You grab it, you run out, you load it into your car, and then you leave before the cops can get there. Because cops, in a general sense, in this region, it's not just an issue in the city we don't talk about, but we have a severe staffing shortage. And so cops aren't going to be able to get specifically to like a mall in Puyallup within enough time to maybe catch these people if they work fast enough. Unless you happen to get lucky and there happens to be a cop nearby. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. So we don't know who the suspects are yet. Presumably, we'll get some of it in the upcoming days. I'm assuming we'll have video evidence or still photos that we can put out there. But at the end of the day, these people got away with it because they feel like they can. And they know that even if they were to get caught, there's not going to be consequences. It's not so much that the county doesn't care even or the people don't care. It's that that's what Democrat policies on policing and the criminal justice system has caused people to believe that they will not suffer any consequences. And I can't blame them for holding that view. Because we've seen over and over and over again, example after example after example of folks getting away with pretty much anything. No consequences for this kind of behavior. And they're going to continue to do it unless we can severely, and I mean severely, course correct and start throwing people in jail where they belong when they pull stuff like this. This wasn't just some simple grab of shoes. And if you put out fireworks in a small building in an enclosed indoor space, that's dangerous. Someone could have gotten hurt. Also, you could have gotten an ugly pair of shoes. And yeah, I've been to Macy's. Their shoes selection aren't that great. Meanwhile, over in Olympia, we have a move to fix a glaring oversight in an otherwise ridiculous bill. Senator Chris Gildon, our friend from Puyallup Republican, is pushing to return to the 21-gun salute in the city under a bill that prohibited the open carry of guns or any other weapon on Capitol grounds. It meant that they can no longer do the 21-gun salute. And that's why it wasn't done during the 71st Korean War anniversary ceremony earlier in the year. It was actually banned. And so in a press release, Gildon said that he was very disappointed that we're not able to honor those who fought in the Korean War with the 21-gun salute. This law is another example of bad policy that was rushed through during the legislative session and must be fixed when the 2020 session convenes in January. Now, in accordance with this law, you're not allowed to have a gun, a weapon, an arm in the building or in any open space on the campus. They pretended that it was a threat for protesters who were pro-Second Amendment to have open carry there. Now, open carry in the state is legal. And obviously, if you have a concealed permit, you are someone who's gone through training that's necessary, and you are safer with someone who is trained, who has a gun, than otherwise. But this legislature run by Democrats, they are anti-gun. They want to ban guns as much as they can without getting the law overturned because it's unconstitutional. So they decided to make this move. Now, I didn't hear any complaints or concern over Antifa thugs who go through the city of Olympia and have done so fairly recently, not just with guns, but with Molotov cocktails and everything. But the state Senate and the state House and Governor Jay Inslee just pretend it didn't happen. In fact, you'll recall where Governor Jay Inslee pretended to not know what Antifa was when he very clearly did. So it's just really bizarre how they just pass these bills and they don't think about it. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to have a ceremony without a color guard, without a 21-gun salute to honor those veterans who are in attendance for the Korean War anniversary. And obviously, these things are going to happen again moving forward, in which this embarrassment will become even more real. I just hope that folks will decide on the left who hate guns to maybe step back and remember they at least pretend to support the troops. And maybe this is something that they could fix by simply saying, okay, you know what, we'll return to this. This is obviously harmless. Unless they're going to say, oh, well, we're triggered by the mere notion of a gun being used, or the sound of, I don't think we can do it. It might just be a little bit too much. I have no doubt that some people, especially the Seattle contingency, would probably take such a dumb position. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text message, 1-800-465-8770. Today, I'm on One News Nation. If you didn't get to see that, you can go to our YouTube channel. You can text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, or just head on over to youtube.com/JasonRANTS. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Don't forget, if you ever miss out on any of my shows, you can subscribe to the podcast. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my show. Of course, wherever it is you download your podcast, get your podcast, whether it's on Apple, Spotify, wherever, Audible, you can just search Jason Rance Show and you'll be able to get my show. Just hit the subscribe button. There was an interesting story that we've been covering because it's just so weird. And it doesn't start in Seattle, but it appears to have ended in Seattle. And it's connected to a funeral home all the way in Louisiana. Its funeral director, his name is Greg Clark. He's the owner of Church Funeral Services. He spoke to King 5 News and said he regretted that he played a part in the case of a 98-year-old man having his body, his dead body, shipped from their service into a public autopsy event. Now, it started in Portland, where it ended up going on, where you can buy tickets to watch this live autopsy. You don't have to be a medical professional. You can just be curious about the way the body works. You could be gross and you just want to see this kind of stuff and it's alarming. They don't really do a background check on any of that, but you can purchase your tickets and see the event. Now, Greg Clark said that he didn't necessarily know what he was getting into. He says some organization called MedEd reached out to him for some assistance.
Originally, MedEd contacted us directly because they were looking for a funeral home in the area that could handle their needs. They're paying us to do the removal, to do a pickup. They're paying us for storage.
Paying us for storage. So obviously he's talking about the body. But what exactly does MedEd do, and how is that connected to this live autopsy story? The manager of MedEd, his name is Abtin Nasiri, also spoke to King 5.
We provide our services for medical institutions, for surgical institutions, for medical device companies, medical implant companies, we paramedics.
Okay, but they also supplied the body to deathscience.org. That's the pay-per-view public autopsy business. And in this case, they supplied the body that was autopsied in Portland a few weeks ago before it was actually shut down. The question then becomes, well, did MedEd know what the body was going to be used for? There have been claims that the family that donated this body, or the man who donated his body post-death, was taken advantage of, that they might not necessarily think that it's a wise idea to do something like this for no apparent educational reason.
Yeah, we had no knowledge at all.
We had no knowledge at all. Now, King 5 says that company, MedEd, has agreements with funeral homes in different parts of the country that allows them to help process the donated bodies to their service, right? And those funeral homes end up getting some sort of fee for the work that they do. They're not doing this for free. Now, the donor or their families end up getting spared the cost of having to pay for a burial or a cremation service. They don't have to do that. So they're giving away their body for research, and MedEd handles the costs associated with that. And they say once research on a body is complete, cremated remains are returned to the family along with a death certificate free of charge. Now, since the funeral home makes money, the families get, you know, a lower cost option of dealing with death. And then on top of that, the body broker, which is what MedEd is, get to gain ownership, for lack of a better term, of the body. Then they can sell it to medical seminars or medical device companies and other companies that need actual human bodies. It's a win-win-win all around. At least that's the perception. Except when it comes to something like this. Because the widow of that man, her name is Elsie Saunders. She's 92 years old. She didn't realize that her husband's body was going to be the centerpiece, if you will, of this pay-per-view event, one that cost between $250 and $500 a ticket. Now, like I said, it happened at the Marriott Hotel in Portland. It happened in a ballroom, which is just very weird to me. People eat there. But then it got some of the attention of the Multnomah County Medical Examiner. I believe they ended up canceling the event after either a day or so. Now, we were supposed to have this event here in Seattle on Halloween, but it was canceled because of all of the pushback. Now, Elsie Saunders is weighing its legal options, according to their great nephew, Harold Atkins. He is also an attorney who lives in Louisiana.
I'll say this. I wouldn't put anything off the table.
So that kind of sounds like they're looking at options to sue. And the more I think about this story, the more disgusted I am, but also the more I understand it. I'm still of completely separate minds here. Number one, it is very clearly unethical if there was anything done that would mislead the family into thinking that their body would not be used for the research that they had in mind when it was pitched. It makes sense to me that someone who's told, hey, your body would be used by a medical company because they're trying to figure out whether or not this new life-saving device can work within a human body or something like that, whatever it is. That makes total sense to me. I understand why someone would do it. But I also understand why someone would say, well, no, we don't want a public display of an autopsy in front of a paying crowd. That is not serving the greater medical community. It doesn't serve anyone except for the, you know, the event providers, like in this case, Death Science. Like, I get that as well. On the other hand, I do think that there is value in learning more about the body, and I'm assuming there are costs associated with this kind of thing that an event ticket of $200 to $500 covers and allows it to move forward. I have no problem, generally speaking, though I prefer it not in a ballroom, I have no problem, generally speaking, saying we will do these live autopsy events because we want people to better understand the human body and how it works and how it functions and what everything looks like. It can give you a new outlook on how to treat life and the body, so long as everyone knows what's going on. The families need to be completely up to speed, and the patient before death should be up to speed on what will go down. I think I said this the last time we gave an update on this story. I've been to, I can't remember, I think it's just Bodies, it's called. They had it here in Seattle where it was a company, and by all reports, everyone who was involved knew going in what would happen. They basically dissected bodies. They didn't do it right in front of you, but they showed you real life body parts and how the body functions. And, you know, it's a little uncomfortable and it's really creepy, but you do get a better sense of how the body works. And I think that that is of value to people. Knowledge, I think, is of value. So this is a story that on its surface, people are saying it's controversial because how dare they do a public autopsy? That's the least controversial part to me. I wouldn't go, even though I'm curious about how the body works. That's a little bit too much for me. And I certainly, again, understand the family who thinks that putting a body on display, not knowing going in that that's what was going to happen, demeans this person in death. I totally agree with that. But if everyone's on board, I see no problem in general with this kind of an event. And I think that, you know, people pushing back should be focused exclusively on whether or not there was consent from the patient when he or she was alive in the family after he or she is no longer alive. I think that part matters the most. And again, I'm assuming you can't bring in a camera, you can't do any of that stuff, so long as all those rules are in place, because you do want to still have dignity for the body, for this past human life. You know, I don't really see what's wrong with this, but if you do, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770, 1-800-465-8770. Got one more hour of the show coming up after this.
This is Seattle's home for conservative thought. AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app.